I just go and I'm like, take all my bodily fluids.
Here you go.
Just take every bodily fluid you can get out of me.
What do you want? Blood, saliva,
urine, whatever. I got it. Yeah. You want it? I got
it. Go for it.
It's a fire sale.
It's a fire sale.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multi-Amory Podcast. On this episode of the Multi-Amory Podcast, we're keeping it real about sexual health.
Oh yeah, we are.
I like I just really like to envision some like really 90s text floating in at an extreme angle.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. With like the trails
keeping
behind
it, real.
It as
real.
It's
real.
Flying in.
Yeah, 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 real. Definitely. So this is the intro to your health class, your ninth grade health class video.
See, that's the thing though. I wish that this would have been like the intro and kind of the shtick, the spiel that we got in our health class, because so much of what is taught in health these days, and especially when we were kids, was just terrible.
Yeah,
and just about scaring you.
Yeah.
And it was awful, awful.
It really depends on the school district also. Mm-hmm. Like there's no standard for what's taught, at least in the United States, that it can so vary by school district to school district. And we still have a lot of places that are teaching abstinence-only education, and it's really not helpful for us.
Nope, not helpful for anyone, especially not the kids of today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kids of today.
So, the up-and-coming children of tomorrow. So basically, I had an idea that we needed to revisit this episode simply because I learned recently that two of my best friends who are monogamous, they were talking about the fact that they were about to go get ready to have a doctor's appointment, and one of them had not been to the doctor and therefore not had an STD test in over 10 years. Jeez. And this person is male, so he has not had an STD test in over 10 years. And in that time, he has had sex with a lot of people and yet has never, ever seen if he has anything. So because of this, I was flabbergasted and I was like, well,
can I cut in really quick? How did this conversation come about between the two of you?
When you run a show on sex and relationships, sex and relationships come up from time to
time. Funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it just became a topic of conversation, and then all of a sudden he was like, yeah, I'm about to go get tested because, like, I haven't in, like, 10 years. And I'm like, what? What? Wait, really? And that would, like, scare me. If I were to go out on a date with him, I would be really worried if like, I knew that my partner or that my potential new sexual partner had not been tested in this amount of time. But his current girlfriend has been with him for 2 years, and in that entire time has never known his sexual history. So I was like, you know what? Let's talk about this a little bit.
Hey, I mean, in terms of talking about dating someone who hasn't been tested in so long too, like aside from even just a concern about the fact that they don't know and that so you don't know either, but also just kind of a person who doesn't take that seriously or doesn't prioritize that is also kind of a bad indicator of like, well, what other things might they not be actively maintaining about their health or about, you know, their effect on other people and all these things. So I feel like there's a few troubling things there.
I don't know why though. I mean, to be fair, when I first started getting sexually active, like that wasn't, this is, I don't know why this is. It wasn't even a thing I thought about to concern myself about for a number of years. And I had gotten all the like health class stuff about STIs and about getting tested, but for some reason it's just like, I don't know, my dumb little like 20-year-old self was just like, la 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 la, like I guess it doesn't apply to me, like I don't feel like I have an STI, you know. I think that, and I don't know why that is, I don't know why that's if that's a product of what we learn in the school system, if it's a product of just not talking about sex or about sexual health enough that it just doesn't become a part of what we're normally thinking about. Like, I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, I think it's twofold, and this is a vast, big generalization, but I think a lot of kids these days, I know I did when I was a child, sorry, I am almost 30, I am no longer a kid.
Kids these days.
No, but I think a lot of young people think that they're invincible in a lot of ways, and so it just doesn't even necessarily cross their minds. And also, on the other flip side of that, I think that there is potential fear involved with getting an STI check, just because it's like there is so much stigma surrounding so many things, which I think is very unfair, and people may just be worried, like, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to have no sex life if I find out that I have something, or blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think fear is a big factor in that. Yeah. I was going to say, I was lucky, I guess, in that in high school, I had a part-time job, and there was another woman, girl, I guess we were both in high school, we'll say boys and girls here.
Okay.
There was another girl who was about my same age who worked there, but she was very actively involved in like sexual education amongst our peers. We went to different schools, but in the same general area. And, you know, we had a little bit of a flirty rapport, and I was into her. But because like that like gave me my motivation to like really listen to what she's saying and be like, yeah, gosh, you're like, right.
Yeah,
that's
sexual
so cool.
Health, that's
like,
great.
That's really
wow.
cool. So so I guess I was lucky in that way that and that was at a point in my life where I had not had sex yet. So like to get that kind of education, I guess, with a little motivation behind it of like why I should care.
I mean, sex is a great motivator,
awesome. Yeah,
including for learning about sexual health, I guess.
Right.
So obviously, this is such a broad topic, and we can't cover the entire scope of sexual health or STI risk or managing that or disclosing that or talking about that. So what are, you know, we kind of boiled down just a couple intentions that we have for this episode.
Right. So the first of those is to get real, as I said in the intro. To keep it real, about what are your chances of being exposed to and being infected with different STIs in your sex life?
We also wanted to talk about the importance of testing. We'll delve a little bit more into that, but just, you know, it's important to get tested, and it's important to talk about that those test results with your partner or potential partners.
And then, of course, I have to give the disclaimer that we're not doctors, we are not health professionals of any kind. You can find lots of great information out there about all of this from the CDC or from Planned Parenthood, but as always, be aware that information comes with an agenda often. So find multiple sources. You know, anything that you hear from us, double check it as well with different sources. Talk to your doctors, not just one doctor, multiple doctors if you can. Get a variety of professional opinions and really make sure that you're making the effort to educate yourself as well, along with, you know, any information that you receive from somebody else, including us.
Yeah, definitely. And that I think today, with the internet being such an easy resource, it's both a bad thing in that, you know, there's a lot of not reliable sources out there, but the advantage we have is if we are proactive ourselves, we can check things and see, like, what are the sources of that? Can I get sources from a lot of different places? Can I read about different studies? Can I try to find places that seem to have more of an even approach to this? Or, like this episode, we tried to look at a lot of different sources for this information, so we're not just like, hey, we're doing an episode based on one article we read on the CDC. Right? That this is pulling together a lot of different things and being like, huh, that doesn't seem to fit with other things I've heard. Let me try to find another source and kind of see, to try to get to a more realistic view of these. So with that, another thing that we wanted to cover real quickly is just about talking about STIs and sort of a few guidelines that we want to be mindful of ourselves, and also we would love for more people in the community to be mindful about the way that they talk about STIs.
Yeah, I definitely see a big disconnect in the ways that STIs and sexual health are talked about within alternative communities versus more traditional communities. And often, I think I often see, especially people who maybe have been in more traditional relationships their entire life and are starting to explore non-traditional relationships, will often still bring with them a lot of old, tired out ways and unhealthy ways of talking about STIs. They'll kind of sometimes bring that in. So we just wanted to kind of lay this down as some standards for talking about things.
Yeah.
The first thing being to, you know, when you're talking about STIs, either about yourself or somebody else or to somebody else, avoid using clean or dirty terminology in talking about it.
People don't often say dirty.
Right.
But they realize that every time you're saying clean, like, oh, I'm clean for STIs, or I only have sex with people if they have a clean bill of health, that by saying clean, you're implying that the opposite of that is somehow dirty.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. Would you say someone was, you know, not clean because they'd had the flu or because they'd had chicken pox in their life?
Right.
That's absurd. And so because we are so uncomfortable with sex in our culture, like, we give it this whole dirtiness thing, just like we used to talk about people, especially women, who've had sex at all as not being clean anymore, not being dirty, less desirable.
Anything.
Yeah. So make sure that you avoid that kind of language. You know, just get more specific with it. Talk about, like, well, I've tested negative for these things, or I've tested positive for these things, or my partner has tested negative for all these things, or tested positive for this, you know, as opposed to it just being the sweep of, like, no, a clean bill of health, or no, all my STI results are clean.
Right.
Yeah, you can be more clinical about it. And in addition, there's a lot of talk out there still regarding jokes and STIs, specifically herpes, that are really damaging and continue that stigma of, like, this is an unclean or an not a good thing, or you somehow are dirty if you have this. So, like, obviously,
especially jokes that add, like, a value judgment to the people
exactly
who have something. Right. Again, like, you wouldn't give a value judgment to someone because they had the flu or not, right? That these are, in both cases, are still infections and diseases that you get from other people. That's how all of them pass, right? It's not, no one just spontaneously is given one of these, right? They're spread from people to people either way. These ones just happen to be related to our genitals sometimes, not even
sometimes.
All the times.
Yeah.
So definitely avoid that.
Reminds me as well, we'll talk about this a little bit later on, but Ella Dawson, who is someone who identifies as polyamorous and I believe queer as well, maybe I might be getting that wrong, but also is very open and vocal about having herpes as well. She talks about actually calling people out when they make a herpes joke. That her first, and she talks about the first time that she did it, it was like at a party and she was sharing a cup with somebody and he was like, don't worry, I'm not sick. And also, I don't have herpes either. So don't worry about that. And that it was really hard for her, but she was like, you know what, actually, that's not funny because I do have herpes and it's actually a very normal thing. And she says that at first it was scary, but the fact that his reaction was not like, oh, that's so gross. It was like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing for me that I just insulted you to your face. And also a whole swath of the population, essentially.
Yeah.
And people remember instances like that. So might be something to consider, even if you do not have HSV. But just to bring that up, you'd be like, you know what? Actually, you probably have herpes. Maybe that's a little bit too provocative.
Well, we're going to talk more about that later. Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Change your language regarding this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's not fucking funny.
Definitely encourage, you know, if people are making jokes about STIs, to not be afraid to say something. You know, it doesn't, again, it doesn't have to be provocative. It doesn't have to be picking a fight. It can just be like, you know what? Actually, like, a lot of people deal with that. And so it's not very funny to minimize it or to make a joke about it.
Yeah, I think also, you know, regardless of your status, whether you have herpes simplex virus or not, like, you can still be one to stand up for that. I remember in high school that it was gay jokes was the thing that was made a lot.
Oh, and I kind of
made, this decision at one point just because I had a lot of friends who identified as gay and I did not at the time identify that way, but still was like, hey, I'm in a position where I'm not the one who's going to get beat up for this or who's going to, you know, get made fun of to my face. So, like, why don't I be the one to stand up and say, hey, actually, could we not make that joke? Because that's not, you know, that's not cool. That's not nice to real people who could have their feelings
hurt. Or saying the word retarded or anything along those lines. It all is in the same category.
It's all related.
Not nice. Yeah. Not kind.
I also just wanted to quickly cover the difference between STD and STI. So for a long time, well, first it was called venereal disease, and so then
good old VD,
good old VD. And then we moved to STD, which stands for sexually transmitted disease. And more recently, I guess not that recently, probably 10, 15 years ago, we started transitioning to saying STI instead of STD. And basically the difference is that an infection means that you have, you know, you've been infected with some kind of a virus or a bacteria or a fungus or something like that, but it might not have any symptoms. Something's only classified as a disease when you're having symptoms, when you're, when the cells in your body have been affected by that to the point where you're having symptoms. So the reason why the switch to STI is to point out the fact that not everyone has symptoms. In fact, as we're going to cover, a lot of people don't have symptoms for these things, even if they have them. So STI is more inclusive, I guess. So all STDs are STIs, but not all STIs are STDs, because it's based on whether or not there are symptoms present.
And then the last thing, just as a note, don't talk about this on your dating profile. And what I mean, what I mean by that, as in what I usually see, is people being like, you know, no drama, no STDs, or you know, I want you to be disease free, or whatever.
Well, and I will say, though, on the other hand, there are a lot of people who feel like it's very important to state on their dating profile, I have HSV.
Right, right. And I think
that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's your choice. If you want to do that, like, that's fine. But more of, I feel like I see it all the time. And it obviously is rooted in a lot of issues around stigma, around the way that we reduce people to whether they're positive or negative for something. It's okay for you to obviously not want to expose yourself. However, do that in your actions and in the choices that you make about your safe sex, rather than trying to filter out somebody and try to find somebody who's disease-free.
Right.
As we'll get into later, that's probably going to be a lot harder than you think that it's going to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And along those lines, if you are having sex, you probably have something or have had something during the time that you've been sexually active, even if you didn't know it. And really, some of the most highly stigmatized STIs are absolutely the most common ones. So if your vision of having this sex life that involves like never having to think about STIs, never being exposed to them, any of that stuff, you're probably honestly not really ready to have sex, because most likely it's going to happen at some time or another. And
yeah,
that's okay.
I feel like I've had a number of clients and just a number of friends also who, for some reason, like their vision of the ideal sex life is like, no one that I have sex with has any kind of STI or has ever had any kind of STI. Like, I never have to even think about it. I never get exposed to it. Like, everyone, like everything is just, you know, like I don't even have to touch it or think about it at all.
Like, the probability of that happening is so ridiculously small.
Yeah.
It's insane
That's the thing, is that it's like, if you are going to have sex, whether it is having sex with one person, whether it is having sex with multiple people over the course of your life, whether it is having sex with multiple people overlapping, you know, within a multi-partner relationship or something like that, you are going to have to address this topic, and you're going to have to deal with, likely, someone testing positive for something or having symptoms for something, whether it's yourself or a partner or a partner's partner, like, you are going to have to deal with it. And so, you know, doing the whole ostrich with the head in the sand tactic of just not dealing with it, or just thinking like, oh, that's fine, I'll just find all partners who don't have any STIs. Like, that's not going to work
for
you.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, good luck.
It's not going to work. And also, a lot of the people who are the most worried about that very likely have something that they don't even know about, that maybe they've had since childhood. And that's the other thing too, is that these infections that we classify as STIs, which we're gonna cover the main ones, there are others as well, but a lot of these can be contracted other ways too, right? And so the idea that we put all this importance on a sexual thing, right? Actually, a really good reference, and I wish I could remember, this might be from one of Ella Dawson's TED Talks, or might have been somebody else, but was talking about the fact that in every doctor's office, every sexual health clinic, every sexual information place, they're required if they get any kind of state money, especially, but are pretty much always required and always say that sort of disclaimer of like, all sex has some risk. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no such thing as safe sex, yada, 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 all that. And then she brought up these charts about the number of incidences of STIs and then the number of incidences of people who actually die from that or are debilitated from that. And these relatively small numbers. And then she brought up a chart of the number of people who are crippled or injured or killed in automobile accidents. Mm. And she's like, how come when we go into the DMV, there's not required to be a sign that says all driving is risky? There's no such thing as safe driving.
Drive at your own risk. Surrounding driving.
Right? Exactly, exactly. Yeah. That we're taught that, oh, abstinence is the only way to stay safe with this, whereas we don't even think about that when it comes to driving, which is much, much more dangerous than having sex. Yeah,
right, right. So what we're going to do, we're going to hit, you know, the big players mm-hmm. in yeah. the world of STIs. And I think the important thing is, because obviously you as listeners, you can go out, like I said, to the CDC or Planned Parenthood and mm-hmm. get whatever kind of statistics or information about transmission or transmission rates or how to protect yourself or whether it's Q-rule and stuff like that. What we found was Mark Manson, mm-hmm. he made this blog post that was him doing this, again, him also kind of getting real, about like, no, really, what are your chances of getting an STI? And he actually breaks it down. He creates something called a raw score, which essentially boils down to the number of people that you would have to have unprotected vaginal sex with in order to catch this STI.
On average.
On average. So the way that he does this, just to break it down, that for STDs that are, he says STDs, sorry, mm-hmm. for STIs that are curable, he took the estimated number of cases per year and then factored it into the number of individuals in the U.S. to get a percentage of those individuals that would contract that. Mm-hmm. And for the incurable ones, he just took the percentage of the American population that has that STI. And he admits that it's a flawed method. Obviously, it's not 100% accurate. It's not going to be like, okay, if you sleep with 129 people, then on number 130 is when you're going to get right. gonorrhea, you know. However, so of course, don't take it at face value. However, I really like the raw score thing because it really gives a better image of, in your mind, of how realistic it is that you would catch this STI mm-hmm. or not, more so than just me telling you, you have a 15% chance or a 50% chance or whatever. Right. So for each of those, we're also going to include the raw score, which I think is just a right. really interesting way of looking at it.
And the point of that raw score, though, as he mentions here, is that because these numbers are very flawed, the point is more to look at the difference between them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like the huge, huge differences between this number for different ones, rather than saying, oh, one in this much number. Okay, that means my odds are this, so I can take that gamble. That's not what this is about. It's more just for the sake of giving some perspective on how common these things mm-hmm. are.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy, or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's multi, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I. Okay, so we're going to start out with the typical STI panel that you get tested for, which are chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, and then HIV we'll hit a little bit later. But those first three, chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, all of them are curable. Chlamydia specifically, chlamydia usually does not present any symptoms. Well, 25% of men don't experience symptoms, but 70% of women don't experience symptoms either. So that's why it's really important to make sure that you're getting checked out, because it's not something where you just notice a symptom and then you can run to the doctor and check. The raw score that Mark Manson gives it is you would have to have unprotected vaginal sex with 36 people before catching it. Again, that's the rough estimate. So that's in comparison to something like gonorrhea, which the raw score is 179, or, you know, 179 people that you'd have to have sexual experiences with or vaginal sex with before getting exposed to gonorrhea. Gonorrhea has been in the news a little bit more lately. It kind of seems to make the cycle every couple of years of them talking about more antibiotic resistant strains coming up. However, it's not as much of a major threat as you might think that it is, according to Dr. Xavier Didelot. See,
that's I don't know how you say it.
Didelot.
He's a senior lecturer in the Department of Infectious Diseases at Imperial College of London, says, at the moment, all cases of gonorrhea are still treatable using some combination of available antibiotics. And I think I remember us looking into this when it was last in the news cycle, is that like there's no strain of gonorrhea that is untreatable. It's just that the ones that are more resistant require different combinations of antibiotics in order to be treatable. It is still curable. There's yet to be a strain of gonorrhea that is incurable.
Yeah, many doctors...
people don't talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, many doctors now by default will also prescribe a combination of antibiotics for gonorrhea as well to just make sure that you get it on the first try. Because if you... like, I don't know if you've heard this, when you have strep throat or something else you're taking antibiotics for, if you don't complete your antibiotic course and the virus or the bacteria survives the antibiotics, it's going to be more resistant the next time, and it's going to take more antibiotics to treat it. So there are now a lot of doctors just by default right away are prescribing two different antibiotics that are the two ones that have been found most effective, so that one way or another, it's going to get got in that first treatment rather than developing more resistance. So anyway, when people do talk to you about that one, again, it is still treatable, and there have not yet been any cases that are uncurable. That is, of course, you know, antibiotic resistant strains of different things come up, but just don't let people convince you that, like, oh, why bother getting tested because it's untreatable now? They're wrong.
Or that's to scare you out of having sex at all.
Sure. Yeah.
Or just the media being like, this is a big thing. Oh my God, people are freaking out. I'm like, chill.
Yeah, but I did want to point out for both of these are a really good example of the importance of getting tested, because like with chlamydia, that can cause fairly serious health concerns, especially for women later down the road, even if they have no symptoms. And so you might not even know that you need to get tested for it unless you just go do and find out. And then it's like, okay, great. I take antibiotics for a week and then it's gone, right? That this isn't some like, oh God, why would I get tested?
As opposed to waiting until there is a major health problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Then the last one, just to knock this one out, is syphilis. So in America, at least, syphilis is not really a major problem anymore. In developing countries, it's much more of an issue.
I have heard that syphilis has made a little bit of a comeback amongst gay men specifically. But it is an entirely treatable,
curable. Right, it's another one just disease. On antibiotics for a couple of weeks and this then you're fine.
Cured in the 1800s.
yeah. Syphilis is one of those weird ones where it comes in stages, where it starts out with sores and then a rash and then it's gone for 15 years and then all of a sudden you die.
So you go crazy.
That's really oversimplifying it, but like then 15 years, like suddenly your body starts deteriorating.
Well,
so Jace, didn't you say something about blindness too, that it's still
it's
can
in
cause
developing
blindness
countries
in people?
I think it's still the leading cause of blindness.
But anyway, again, one that's really easy to treat if you know you have it, but if you don't, you could end up having organ failure 20 years down the road. So just get tested.
Get an STD test.
It's not
a STD test.
You probably have at least 15 years.
Right.
So go get that checked up on. Yeah. So again, I mean, I kind of lumped all those into one category, but they are the ones that are most commonly tested for. If you walk into any clinic and just ask for an STI test, those are the ones that they're definitely going to mm-hmm. test you for. And they're the ones that are arguably the easiest to treat.
I don't even think there's an argument there. They are
the easiest to treat. Okay.
And that's just a urine test, right? For all three of those? Or syphilis, a blood test still?
You know what? I don't remember now. Because I always have
just
them
just go in and I'm like, do my blood.
Like, I just go in and I'm like, take all my bodily fluids.
Here you go.
Just take every bodily fluid you can get out of me.
What do you want? Blood, saliva,
urine, whatever. I got it.
Yeah.
You want it? I got
go
it.
Go for it.
It's a fire sale.
It's a fire sale.
Oh, God.
All right.
On that note,
okay.
Let's move on to HSV.
Well, we haven't yet moved on to needing to have stool samples for any kind of STI testing.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Well, hopefully that day doesn't come.
Hopefully not. All right. So with that, we want to move on to the herpes virus, also known as HSV. This one, I often will mess up saying HSV and HPV because those seem very similar, even though they're in different families of viruses. Anyway, HSV, which stands for the herpes simplex virus. This one is a big one because there's a lot of stigma to it. However, it's important to realize that more than 500 million people are estimated to have a genital infection of HSV. Now, the thing to know about HSV here is that it can be in different parts of your body. It's something that attaches to nerve centers in your body. So it's not just like the flu or the chicken pox that's kind of an all-over systemic mm-hmm. infection, that this one is localized. And so this is only people who have it genitally. This doesn't include orally or anywhere else.
It could
else
be anywhere. I think it's more likely to break out in mucous membranes, but you could have it on your foot.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It literally could break out anywhere on your body.
Mm-hmm. So it's incredibly common. It's estimated that one out of every six people has HSV2. And then if you also add the people who probably have HSV1, that number jumps to about one in every four people who have either strain one or two of the herpes simplex virus. Now, for those of you who are not aware of this, take a moment, take a breath, and don't freak out, because this isn't such a huge deal. And we're going to get into that in a second. Dedeker wants me to cover the raw score too, because I skipped that. Mm-hmm. That the raw score, as we talked about for this one, is 13 people. So
again, if we're just using that as a comparison, mm-hmm. That's, you know, in theory, fewer people that you would have to have unprotected sex with than the ones that we just covered, chlamydia, gonorrhea, mm-hmm. or syphilis.
Yeah, one third of the people who you would have unprotected sex with to be likely to get chlamydia,
mm-hmm.
one third of that number mm-hmm. to have herpes simplex virus. Mm-hmm. So, all right, I think there's a lot of people out there hyperventilating.
Mm-hmm.
Go get a, you know, paper bag to breathe into or something like that. Because this number really scares people, especially because how much we've been taught to be scared of herpes or think that this means you're a dirty person or you're a bad person.
Sex life is over.
Right.
Yeah, that your sex life is over.
That no one will want to have sex with you again. Yeah. Exactly.
You want to know a fun thing I learned?
Sure.
I learned that...
Is it actually fun or is it going to be a bummer?
I think it's fun.
Okay. All right. Great.
What's the fun thing?
That in countries and cultures where in the language there's not a different word for cold sore and herpes, like, because in Spanish, for instance, it's the same word for both herpes and for a cold sore, that there's much less stigma in those cultures and in those countries than in English-speaking countries, for instance, where we do make a distinction, even though it's literally the same exact thing.
Yeah, well, let's cover that real quick. Mm-hmm. So a cold sore that a lot of people have, a lot of people are not so worried about, that is the herpes simplex virus. Most often, it's HSV-1, which people will often think of as like, oh, HSV-1's the oral one and HSV-2's the genital one. That's not true. You can get either one in either place. That's entirely not true. But it happens just a little bit more frequently, but that's not true at all. So anyway, so a cold sore is the herpes virus. You can have it in your mouth and we call it a cold sore, or you can have it in your genitals and we call it herpes, and all of a sudden we freak out about it. An important thing to know about this too is that if you go into your doctor and just say, I want an STI test, or you go into a Planned Parenthood or wherever, they most likely will not test you for this. And this surprises a lot of people.
You gotta coax them.
Yeah, you really got to convince them.
This surprised me too. And it's interesting because the reason why most doctors don't test for this, and by most, I mean almost all, like this is very universal, why they don't test for it is that doctors have found that the social and psychological negative effects of finding out that you have been exposed or that you have HSV 1 or 2 is so much more damaging than the actual disease itself, which is like a little bit of an inconvenience. But other than that, poses virtually no health risk to you whatsoever. And so they found that they don't test for it because it's more likely to cause psychological damage.
See, I kind of have mixed feelings about that because I think there's a little bit of a backfire to that. Like, I get doctors, I think that it comes from a place of wanting to reduce, obviously, that psychological damage, maybe even wanting to reduce stigma, you know, trying to tell people like, you know what, no, you don't need to worry about it unless you have symptoms, you know, so I'm not even going to test you for it. But that sets up more situations where, for instance, let's say like, maybe I catch HSV2 from someone I'm sleeping with.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, they told me that they didn't test positive for anything. They told me that they didn't have any STIs. Like, they lied to me. And that person is like, well, I didn't know. Like, my doctor wouldn't even test me, you know? And a lot of people also don't even realize that they're not getting tested for HSV. And so when they receive back test results that are all negative, they assume, oh, I'm all negative for everything.
Right.
And that serves to further create the stigma of like, oh, people with STIs or with HSV like are liars and
certainly
scoundrels. Yeah. You know, that they're liars and they're shady and you can't trust them. And so like, I
think there's nothing wrong with knowing.
Yeah, like, exactly. So I feel like a little bit mixed about doctors really not wanting to test. It's like, I get that you as a doctor understand that this doesn't actually have a huge health risk, and I get that, and you're trying to protect people, but at the same time, it kind of leaves people the opportunity to be ignorant and then to unintentionally end up hurting other people as well.
Yeah. So, so for example, I went to my doctor a couple years ago now, 2 or 3 years ago, and said I wanted to be tested for HSV. I was like, I haven't had any outbreaks or any symptoms, but I have some partners who have it, and I just kind of want to know my status. And I had to essentially convince him, because he was like, oh, I don't know. I had to convince him. I was like, look, I know, I get it. I probably have it. And I understand that that's not a big deal. I would rather know than not know. And he was like, well, okay, sure, I'll do the test for you, but what you do with those results is up to you. Those were the words he said, because he just
what does that mean?
Well, I think
him trying to be like, don't come crying to me about it.
Right, don't come crying to me if you're upset at actually getting these results. And I've heard similar stories from other people who've gotten resistance from their doctors about testing for it. Anyway, and I did that, and my test results showed that I have antibodies for HSV1, which is another way of saying I have had or been exposed to HSV1 in my life. It could have been as a child. It could have been through sexual partners. It could have been from kissing somebody. Like, who knows, right? I don't know where I got that, and I personally have not had any outbreaks that I've been aware of. So my likelihood of passing that on to other people is fairly low, and it makes me a little more resistant to getting HSV1 in another location because I have antibodies to it already. But it's kind of like, that's the information I have, and I like the fact that I have it. It's honestly, for me, I feel like it would be more stressful to test negative for everything, because then it's like, oh God, but now I have to maintain this like straight A report card, you know, because
like,
we have
like
that,
it's a report card,
right? Like, we have that psychological thinking about it. So for me, it's kind of like, okay, cool. And it was funny too, my doctor in giving me the results was sort of explaining that you have HSV1, like you don't have this thing, so you're not actively having an outbreak, and you haven't recently been exposed to this, or this number would be higher. But then he said, and for HSV2, you don't have that one yet. He just threw in the yet, because he's just like, yeah, you're probably going to get it. Like, it's not the end of the world, but just, you know, there's your results. Yeah. Do with it what you will.
Have fun with that.
Yeah.
So I guess it's only kind of related, but I mean, the whole stigma surrounding it is so frustrating because of how arbitrary it is. And that really, I really started to see that when I got shingles a couple of years ago. Because shingles is herpes virus. It's herpes zoster. So it's, you know, it's just in the same family, but a little bit different. And The
and
symptoms
related to chickenpox as
related
well.
Related
right?
to chickenpox as well. And the symptoms for shingles are very similar to herpes. You know, you get blisters, like it gets itchy, you get blisters, they scab over, then they fall off, you know, kind of similar transmission rates. And again, you know, can be exposed if you have open sores, like then you can transmit it that way. There's also some asymptomatic shedding, viral shedding, just like normal herpes simplex does. But with herpes simplex, we associate it with sex. And then with shingles, we associate it with old people. You know, because it's like if I tell... And it's the same thing. Like, I have shingles in my body. Like, it's not curable. I have it in my body the same way that someone can carry HSV in their body for their entire lives. Like, I have it. But it'd be a very different conversation for me to say to somebody, like, okay, so I have this infection on my head area somewhere. I can expose it to you asymptomatically. It results in like these blisters. You have it for your entire life and it's called shingles versus when like, and it was herpes, like the very different reactions you get from people, even though it's almost literally the same exact impact and the same exact thing. It's just, it's so, so arbitrary.
Yeah. And unfortunately, TV and media continue to keep the stigma alive and well. And it is really unfortunate. Like one of the articles that I read talked about the movie The Hangover and how they said, like, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except for herpes. And I'm like, ugh, God, like, it's awful that they fucking had to throw that in there. But people don't even think about it.
People don't even think about it. And again, if we look at this statistic that most likely one in every four people has one or the other or both strains of HSV.
So there were four people in The Hangover. So clearly one of them has it, at least.
Right?
So
it's just
you guys.
Just that kind of joking, especially because those jokes are so often made by people who have no idea about the reality of HSV or how likely it is that they have it and have no idea. So it really is unfortunate. And I do think I encourage you out there who feel like you're in a position where you can do this safely is to call people out on it. You don't have to be mean about it. You don't need to shame them in return about it. I don't think that's very effective. But of just saying, hey, actually, that's a really hurtful thing to say because it's this common. If you want, you can educate them about it. But if you're in a position to do that, please do it. And so let's stop this trend. Stop allowing this to be an easy joke that we all just accept as something that's okay to say.
Right. And again, we talked about her already, but Ella Dawson has this fantastic, fantastic blog where she's just very out and open about having herpes. And she's also a fantastic writer on top of it. She's a great resource to check out. She has a really great blog post specifically aimed at people who've just been diagnosed and who are freaking out. She also, her favorite blog post of hers, or of mine, of hers, my favorite blog post of hers that she wrote, that I read, but she wrote, and I liked it.
Just so we're clear.
It's called, Why Should I Date Someone with Herpes? Because she gets that question all the time. And it's freaking fantastic. Definitely recommend the read. If you are asking that question of yourself, why should I date someone with herpes? Go give it a read. Might help give you some perspective. And
it's super valuable if you're someone who's just been diagnosed with herpes or you think you might have it and you're freaking out thinking, oh God, I can't be polyamorous anymore. I can't have casual sex anymore. I can't write any of these things. That's a really great resource for that. And I know so many people who have been really scared and had those concerns, like they've had their sex card revoked because of this, until they actually start educating themselves and educating the people around them and learning about it and realizing, oh, okay, this is actually not a big deal and not something that's going to dramatically change my life in the way that I thought it was. So if that's relevant to you, definitely check out Ella Dawson.
All right, so the next one that we wanted to talk about is HPV. So this one jumps up even more in the raw score. It is 4. So only 4 people might it take for you to potentially get HPV of some strain, because there's a ton of strains of this. So more than 290 million women have HPV, and about 80% of sexually active people are infected with HPV at some point in their lives. And then in 90% of cases, this infection is cleared by the body within 2 years. But really, each year, about 39,800 new cases of cancer are found in parts of the body where HPV is found. However, yeah, that's not obviously a huge amount in comparison to the number of people who have it. But this is another reason to get tested and screened for it. Why women especially need to get screened for it on a yearly basis, because there is a potential that it can lead to cancer. But this is also a thing that now has a vaccine for it, and men and women can get the vaccine for this.
Yeah. If you're young.
So if you're young, and also bear in mind the vaccine also only protects you from the cancer-causing strains, which is actually fine, because those are the ones that you need to be worried about.
In my research, it's not just the cancer-causing anymore.
I think the one I got was just the cancer-causing strains.
Also some of the wart-causing strains.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, the wart-causing as well. I think it's 9 strains at this point.
Yeah.
And I got...
It used to be like 4 or 5, and now it's up to 9. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's a series of 3 shots, I believe.
Oh, I got the 1.0 version that covers fewer strains. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's for young people, 26 and younger. But now, like... kids are getting it too, but people in their teens can get this vaccination as well.
Right.
This is a thing that I have gotten twice. I have had 2 different cancer-causing types of HPV. Once, first in 2011, and then I got the vaccine, and then I got it again in 2015. So it's like, well...
Wait, and it was confirmed it was the cancer-causing strains? Or is it regular
strains? Both of them were the high-risk strains, both of them, so... Right. They were different ones, but again, you know, I've definitely had sex with far more than 4 people, and so clearly, I was bound to get it potentially more than once.
Well, but your experience of having it, I mean, what was your experience of having it, and what was your experience of recovering from it?
Well, the first time, I was monogamous with Jace, and I was devastated.
Yeah.
I was absolutely devastated at the time, because I really did have that idea of, like, I'm a disgusting, gross human who has this, like, blah, 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 blah. It's awful. And, like, I just felt very down and awful about myself. And really, like, my mother, even when I told her about it, she's like, just calm the fuck down. Like, you're going to be fine. Seriously. I'm pretty sure she said that to me. And she was right. And she was absolutely right. Because my body cleared it within 6 months.
I had,
you know, yeah, you have a colposcopy, which is just to basically do a biopsy of the tissue, and then you have another pap smear in 6 months, and in that time of 6 months, it completely cleared. And the same thing happened the second time. So I attribute that maybe to in nothing more than I am vegan and have great immunity. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, most people, it will clear within 2 years of getting a strain.
Right. But again, like with herpes, whether it does or not, this one doesn't really have any adverse health effects besides increasing your risk for certain types of cervical cancer or, you know, cancer where the HPV virus is. Which is something that, yes, it is important to know that so that you can have your doctor check for that. Because as we all in today's world know about cancer, now the earlier you detect it, the easier it is to treat and not have that become a problem or something that's going to really affect your life as much.
Yeah.
And bear in mind, I've seen this happen a lot. If you contract HPV, it's not going to be immediately clear who you got it from.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, this one can take a long time to show up.
It can take a long... It can be anyone. It can take a long time to show up. I've seen, like, a lot of pain and a lot of tears over people being very angry at their ex or very angry at the person that they're with right now because you gave me HPV, but there really isn't a way to prove that. You know, unless the person that you're sleeping with, if they happen to be presenting some kind of symptoms, like genital warts, for instance. And along that note, when it comes to men, there is no way to test men for HPV, unless they are presenting warts,
right?
Then it can be tested. But if they're not, they can be carrying it, have no symptoms, and have no idea. And so that one is a hard one because of the fact that if someone tells you, if you are sleeping with a partner who has a penis, and they tell you, oh, I've tested negative for everything, there is no way for them to test for HPV.
Right.
So that may not be a good basis for you to be like, okay, we'll just have unprotected sex and it'll be great. Because there is no way for them to know. So just bear that in mind.
Yeah. And then also that this, just on the subject of safer sex, is that With a lot of these, both HPV and HSV, these are also transferred through skin contact as well. So even using things like dental dams or condoms are not 100% effective. 100%. They're gonna make it less likely for this to be transmitted between people, but it's not a foolproof thing, which again, I would love for that information to not go toward abstinence education, but instead toward just destigmatizing these things so we can just be realistic about them and not, not put all this like emotion into something that's really just like, okay, great, I have this thing that might occasionally give me some kind of a rash or irritation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah. That's all. That's right?
All. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Moving along.
So again, get tested, but don't freak out.
Yeah.
Because really, yeah, don't take the route that I did back when I was a wee lass in 2011.
Yeah.
And get really down on myself. Instead, just, continue your yearly screening and mm-hmm. then... You should be fine. You'll mm-hmm. clear it within 2 years, most likely, if anything does happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So moving on to, again, the one that usually comes up on the standard STI testing panel, which is HIV. HIV, so the raw score for this one is 1,250 people, so mm-hmm. that roughly you'd have to have unprotected sex with 1,250 people before you'd be exposed or would catch HIV. Mm-hmm. That number drops to significantly less if you're engaging in anal sex or if you're engaging in needle sharing practices of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely increases your risk. So HIV these days, it's not the death sentence that it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Of course, catching it is going to change your life and it's going to be expensive. But a person who takes their HIV medicine as prescribed and stays virally suppressed, they can still stay healthy and they effectively end up having no risk of sexually transmitting HIV to HIV negative partners.
Yes.
So it's the kind of thing, it's like if you live in the US and you have access to health insurance, you will probably be able to maintain a normal, healthy life mm-hmm. even after contracting HIV. Of course,
the earlier
that you catch it, the better. Mm-hmm. Of course, people who live in developing countries or less privileged areas, it's a totally different and much sadder story.
Certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this one also, just a few other things about this, is there are also drugs out there that they won't make you immune to it, but
like prep drugs,
right?
Yeah.
That it won't make you immune to it, but can make you significantly less likely to catch HIV, and that especially if you are someone who is doing things that puts you at a higher risk. Such as being a man who has sex with men regularly, especially if you're doing that without condoms, that there are other ways to further decrease your risk for this. But the thing that I always like to point out about HIV that makes it a little bit different from some of these other ones is that this is specifically through body fluids like semen and blood, that this is not transmitted through saliva. And it's not transmitted through urine, things like that, that this is fairly specific. And so this is one that actually condoms are much, much more effective in preventing than the other ones.
Not just like a mucous membrane.
To a very high degree, yeah. And this is one too that the last time I looked into this, unless there's some other complicating factor, exposing more of your blood in your mouth, like if you have open sores in your mouth or something like that, say if it's combined with having a cold sore outbreak or something, that even having unprotected oral sex with someone with HIV is there haven't actually been documented cases of it being passed that way. Even through, I think they did studies that it's like, you would have to drink the equivalent of like a gallon of another person's saliva that's absurd, right? So this is one that I do like to stress to people, is one that with just a reasonable amount of safe sex practices, you don't even need to go, all out with like gloves and dental dams and everything to really dramatically reduce or even eliminate your risk of transmitting this one. So I do like to emphasize that in terms of people being like, oh, well, okay, if everything's just whatever, no big deal, then like why use condoms at all? Mm-hmm. that this is one that that's worth it. Why the fuck not? Like, why not?
Just do it.
Yeah.
And that brings us to our other, I would say, the most common sexually transmitted infection, which is having a baby.
Someone's feelings are going to be hurt by that.
No, there was an episode of House MD where he a woman came in with symptoms worrying she was sick, and he's like, "Ah, well, I'm afraid to tell you that you have a parasite. Most people, though, grow attached to it. They even name it, and it'll probably affect you for at least 18 years. It's like you're pregnant." No, but okay, let's be real about this. So this one, we have a raw score of 100 sexual encounters. So this one's a little different, that this isn't number of people, because this one, your risk goes up the more times you have sex with even the same person over and over again. So again, this is penis and vagina sex that we're talking about here. But about 1 in 100 times of having unprotected sex will lead to pregnancy. Now, this one's interesting because we often, I think for a lot of people, this one's kind of like an afterthought, or we think, oh, well, if the woman's on the pill or some other kind of hormonal birth control, like whatever, I don't need to worry about that. Or it's like, oh, well, STIs affect me for life, and like I could take care of a pregnancy, or however you want to think about
An STI affects my sex life for the rest of my life. I mean, a baby does too, but
A baby most likely will as well.
Right. And so just that this is one that I feel like a lot of people don't take as seriously as they should, in my opinion here. Yeah. I guess I don't like to say should, but really though, take this one more seriously, because a pregnancy, even if the woman in this case has decided that she's not going to have this pregnancy and is going to terminate it, it's expensive and rough on your body. Right? I mean, this is not a pleasant...
And potentially on your psyche.
Potentially, right. Yes.
This is not a pleasant experience to go through. People who are like, oh, well, I'll just take the morning after pill. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you guys ever taken the morning after pill?
Oh, yeah.
The plan B or whatever?
Yeah.
What, a lot of times.
Yeah.
You could probably sum up, like four.
Right? Yeah. If you could sum up in a word what that experience is like.
In $50
one word? Of freak out.
$50.
$50
of freak out.
I don't know. I mean, for me, it's more the annoying. I mean, I have not taken it a ton in my life, and I've never used it as like my go-to plan.
Right.
You know, some people have, where it's like, okay, whatever, like we'll have unprotected sex and then I'll just take the morning after pill and it'd be great, which I don't think is a great plan to have.
Well, it's if the condom broke, that's happened to me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's basically the only time I've used it, is if a condom broke. And basically, I don't know, the experience that I've had is just that, like, sometimes maybe it might make you a little bit sick to your stomach and it might kind of mess up what your menstrual cycle is like. I don't know. I don't think it's that impactful, honestly.
My experience of you taking it has definitely had a lot of effect on you, just sort of like physically and emotionally just feeling shitty and it being in a...
I've taken it with you too, Jizz.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I can say from the outside, I feel like I perceive it having a fairly large effect. I'm sure
I think
that
it just
varies from person to person, but still.
Well, yeah, and just it just the idea that there is like the pregnancy scare that potentially is happening. Psychologically.
Okay, like it's not a good day, the day that you have to take the morning after pill.
Right.
They're just like, fuck, let's make sure we're okay.
Like, no, it's not a good day, like anytime you're in a position where you're having a pregnancy scare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also have a special message for the men out there with this one, is that, you know, so often the role of, you know, Planned Parenthood, right? The role of controlling pregnancy falls to women because...
Well, people who have uteruses.
People who have uteruses, mm-hmm. Right? Like, they're the ones who have pills they can take or have injections they can get or, you know, can have things done that are not permanent. And so it's like, okay, well, it's their job to do that then. And a lot of men, in their interest in having sex without condoms with women, will be like, okay, well, she's doing that, so that's going to be her responsibility. And something that I do like to stress to men is a lot of us are not fully aware of the fact that if even, you know, nothing's 100% effective, but even if you do get somebody pregnant, that you actually have no say in whether or not that child ends up being born. Like you have no legal rights to that at all, to decide whether there is an abortion or there isn't, or right? So you have legally no control over whether this does affect your life for the next 18 years. And I think that while that might seem like, oh God, I'm trying to scare you, I'm just saying, wear a fucking condom. Be a man about it, if I can be a little cliche there.
Jeez.
But right, just like fucking take some responsibility for your role in this as well. Mm. I just can't stress that enough, that how significantly this can affect your life, and that this is definitely something worth taking responsibility for and not treating this as something that only women have to worry about.
Yeah, I think yeah. If you're going along and your plan in your head is just kind of assuming like, oh, well, if my female partner gets pregnant, like we'll just, you know, we'll have an abortion or like we'll take care of it. But it's like, well, sorry, that's actually not your choice.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, we've been fighting for a long time to make sure that it is the woman's choice or mm-hmm. the person who's totally. Actually has the uterus to be making that choice. And so, but what that means is that if you're thinking like, oh, whatever, like if she gets pregnant, I won't have to worry about it because we'll take care of it. It's like, but you might still end up on the hook for,
especially if this is someone that you haven't had that conversation with,
right?
Especially
right.
with more Jesus. Casual partners,
right?
Right, someone that you've just started dating, even mm-hmm. right? Because those are the people we don't think about it with.
No, like don't ever make assumptions.
Don't make assumptions
no. about what's going to happen. So like, have that conversation.
Yeah. Anyway, with that.
So. Why is it important?
Yeah.
Why is it important to get tested for STIs?
Why indeed? So, I mean, I think yeah. as we've hit a couple times in this, is that pretty much a lot of these things are treatable or manageable, but only if you know that you have them in mm-hmm. the first place. I've met a lot of people. I've come across a number of clients, like people who think like, oh gosh, well, I'd rather just not know. Or if it's not that big of a deal, then I'm just not going to get tested and I'd rather mm-hmm. just give myself the peace of mind. And it's like, I get what you're going for, but it's a head in the sand kind of tactic. It's like, mm-hmm. it's only if you know, then you actually have the power to make decisions about it and mm-hmm. the power to actually like take care of yourself and to help take care of your partners as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you really can't have any type of meaningful conversation about safe sex if you yourself don't know your own status. You can't be honest about your status if you don't know it. And you can't expect someone else to be honest about their status if you don't know your status to talk to them about it.
Right.
So, no, figure it out and get tested.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and different people have different expectations for how often they or their partners will get STI testing. We've talked about this a little bit earlier in the episode, but I think this one's an important one to educate yourself through some of the resources we've talked about in this episode. But educate yourself so you have your own feelings about it. You have your own choices you can make instead of just relying on other people's insistence on yes or no to STI testing, or putting that responsibility on someone else, to make that choice for yourself and make your own decisions about what kind of risk you want to take versus being able to have sex, mm-hmm. right? So let's give them some actionable takeaways.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, encourage your partners to get tested as well.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's again, if you have gotten tested, if you know what your status is, that just makes it a lot easier, especially if you're, you know, if you're hooking up with someone new for the first time or mm-hmm. just connecting with someone for the first time, that you are able to proactively be like, well, this is what my status is because I know, because I was tested mm-hmm. relatively mm-hmm. recently. I would love for you to know the same thing mm-hmm. or, you know, it gives you a place to start that conversation from.
Yeah.
You can go back and revisit our episode that we did on making pre-sex talk sexy, mm-hmm. of being able to have these conversations about your status, about what safe sex practices you want to use, about what safe sex practices you use with other partners, and being able to about, you know, if you need to disclose something, about making that talk not this like really awkward, rigid, uncomfortable thing, but something that can be fun, can be comfortable, can be even sexy.
Also, by educating yourself now, both about your own status, but also just about STIs in general, like a lot of the common misconceptions we've talked about in this episode, by doing that now, rather than waiting until you're confronted with it, until you have a partner or you yourself has one of these things and you freak out and you don't know how to respond to it, that by knowing beforehand, you can know how to respond to that. So if you meet someone who you really like and then you find out that they have HSV 1 or 2, that the first couple of times that happened to me, I was like, I don't know how to respond to this. And so my answer to them was, I don't know enough about that. I need to think about that. So sorry, I'm not sure that we can do this right now. Whereas later on, after having learned more on my own, not specifically being motivated because I want to have sex with this person, but just learning more in general, then when I was presented with that in the future, I knew what questions I wanted to ask about it, what they were doing to, you know, minimize their outbreaks or their risk of transmitting it, and then also what kind of safe sex practices I wanted to take. And then also at the end of the day, realizing that it's not the end of the world. It's not something I needed to be so scared about. And then I've been able to have a number of fantastic relationships with people who have HSV 1 or 2 and not been worried about it. But I wouldn't be able to do that if I hadn't educated myself beforehand.
And that just goes along with, you know, take your sexual health into your own hands. Don't outsource it. Don't rely on other people to protect you. I mean, I see this happen a lot where it's like, well, I want to be able to have unprotected sex with this particular partner. So I need to make sure that all of my partner's partners are the ones who are getting tested all the time and who are having super, super safe protected sex so that we can take more risks.
Right.
No, like protect yourself. Protect yourself. Don't rely on somebody else or somebody else even further on down in your polycule or in your network to be the one carrying all the load of that responsibility. Like, you need to carry that responsibility as well. And that's not, you know, I say responsibility like it's a big burdening thing, but no, it's like, it's a good thing. It's empowering. It means that, you know, you can be in situations, you know, for instance, where, you know, you meet someone, you connect with, you really like them, and then they reveal like, oh, I have HPV, or I had HPV 2 years ago, and that you can be like, well, I know what decisions I've made about myself to protect myself. And so I can carry that knowledge and those practices into this without having to worry about it, without having to scramble, and without having, you know, having to go ask 20 people in my polycule to change their practices or, you know, things like that.
Right.
Woo.
Whoa, wow. I mean, I still feel like we only touched, scratched the surface
this.
No, like, there's so much to talk about in this topic. And yeah.
I think there's
Hopefully we gave you something.
Yeah, hopefully. I think this one is, I think we hit on a lot of the most common subjects that come up. There's obviously so much more to all of this. If you have a specific question about this or something that you want to discuss about this, you can leave that in the comments for the episode. You can tweet at us on Twitter, stuff like that. Like, please continue this conversation. This isn't something that has to end right here and this is all the information. This is something that medical science and everything is constantly developing and learning about this as well.
Yeah. So if you'd like to have your question or comment played on your show, you can call 678-MULTI-05 and leave us a voicemail, or you can send us an audio message at the MultiAmory Facebook page. You can also email us at info@multiamory.com or send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. To support our show and join our private Facebook community, go to patreon.com/multiamory. MultiAmory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Jace Lindgren, and me, Emily Matlack. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.